Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Now it's Aubameyang with a quick shot. It's a goal for Arsenal. Aubameyang on the edge of the box. The ball spilled out to him. He took it with his right hand, right foot, out towards the bottom right hand corner. Just bent it lovely around Hugo Lloris in the Tottenham Hotspur goal. And it's Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang with his second goal of the game here. Terrible mistake by Juan Foyt. He gives the ball away to Aaron Ramsey. He sets up Lacazette. Lacazette is just behind him. He's forced to check back and he falls and he puts it into the back of the net. Alexander Lacazette. He slips. He shoots. He scores. It's into the bottom left-hand corner. We've just got over 10 minutes left to play of this North London derby. And it's Arsenal 3, Tottenham Hotspur 2.
Incredible turnaround. We talked about the atmosphere. Every Arsenal supporter seems to have a red and white scarf right now. And it's a chance here.
Oh, it's Lucas Torreira. It's on the box. He's through.
Puts
it in. Lucas Torreira. The Uruguayan cuts it off the right hand side. He's got his shirt off. He's down there celebrating with the Arsenal faithful. We've got 10 minutes on the clock left to play in this game. It's Arsenal 4, Tottenham Hotspur 2.
This stadium has erupted. You've never seen the like here at Emirates before. This is a throwback to the 80s, no doubt about it.
Gary Breen's with us. He had his top off mid-commentary alongside Stephen Doyle yesterday. Have you calmed down?
I have. I was a bit embarrassed listening to that. And I even at the time, I said to Stephen about two or three minutes later, why was I referenced in the 80s as if Arsenal had a brilliant team since then? But it was literally remembering what it felt like as a 13-year-old going to North London derbies myself. And yeah, it was a brilliant day. It really was yesterday.
It's just like the 80s, Steve, as he looked at you blankly.
Oh, no, but it was, you could sense it. There was something, yeah, obviously, that the whole supporters have really connected with the manager in terms of the apathy under Wenger before, who is and will always be regarded as Arsenal's greatest ever manager.
Yeah.
But they've got a team that they're proud of. They keep singing this song about, we've got our Arsenal back. And I've always said, I'm not quite sure exactly what that means, because this is still a work in progress and there's still a lot of work to be done, notably defensively. But in terms of playing on the front foot yesterday, and Tottenham came with a team that they believed in, the atmosphere was brilliant leading into the game, and the game did not disappoint.
So what are we seeing here? How excited should Arsenal fans be? Is this a real key moment in their development under Emery?
Well, it was a big question, wasn't it, in terms of the very fact that they'd been on this 18-match unbeaten run and they'd rode their luck a lot. I mean, I've seen a lot of Arsenal this season, and in first-half performances, they could have quite easily have been 1-2 goals down. But they've shown so much character to come back, and quality more than anything in the second half to win those games. So that suggests that Emery is a problem solver. That I know people may well counter that and say, well, listen, why is he getting it wrong in the beginning? But this is still a relatively unbalanced squad that he inherited from Wenger, and it's taking time to get his message across. But even yesterday, they played so well in that first half, but that unreliability about that defence, suddenly a 2-1 behind going into half-time. He was so bold in terms of making really key substitutions straight away. Brought Lacazette on, brought Ramsey on, played Lacazette through the centre with Aubameyang, played Ramsey at 10. Mm. The whole game changed from that moment on.
So what happened?
Spurs literally got outspursed.
Yeah.
When I think about Tottenham, watch them so often, they're so physical, so dominant. Bearing in mind how good they were against Chelsea in dismantling Sarri's brilliant start to the season the weekend before. But they just couldn't live with Arsenal. It was unbelievable.
Match of the Day did a kind of a graphic where they had Lacazette pulling wide and Aubameyang pulling wide and Ramsey almost running through the middle. That was their analysis of why that worked so well in the second half. What were you seeing?
I haven't seen any of the footage since I've come back. I haven't had a chance, but I will do. But I wouldn't have seen it that way, to be perfectly honest. I think that Aubameyang and Lacazette went straight through the middle.
Right.
And as a result, Pochettino had to go to three centre-halves. And that's in keeping with modern centre-halves now. They rarely play against two centre-forwards, so it's 2v2, like how we would have done in our time in 4-4-2 systems. I know there's different demands now in terms of the likes of wingers now attack from out to in, but they couldn't cope with it. They literally went through the middle. When he made that change at half-time, I was thinking, don't play Aubameyang towards the left, which he normally does. And at times, when Ramsey plays 10, and I've seen him play it in the beginning of the season where he got the nod ahead of Ozil, surprisingly, he goes so early, so desperate to try and get in the box that he tries to be like a Frank Lampard, but he hasn't got the same timing as Frank Lampard. Goes too early, and at times it can be easy to mark because he's up against you before the ball arrives. Not yesterday. He kept staying in the pockets, playing on the left or the right-hand side of Dyer, and Dyer just couldn't cope with it. And they just had a foothold from there. And from behind that, I mean, Torreira, he's been a fabulous signing. He gave him that base there. Xhaka then gets on the ball, makes passes, and they dominated an area that Tottenham rarely get dominated in.
You called Torreira early, I must confess. I remember you doing a game with Nathan early on the season, and you really liked the look of him early on, and he's really grown and got better, and he's become a fan's favourite already, and even he was picked out in a big way in Match of the Day last night, man of the match. Like, if Xhaka doesn't see the danger, this guy does seem to see the danger.
Yeah, it's incredible to have that type of awareness at such a young age, and that physical presence, that aura about him. Bearing in mind, he's about 5'4".
Yeah.
But he literally plays like he's 6'4". He's like Vieira. He reads situations so well in terms of sensing danger, getting into good early positions, then collecting the attack. This is something that Xhaka never does as such. But I did. I mean, Arsenal have been crying out for that midfield presence now for 3 or 4 seasons. I went there a couple of seasons ago when Elneny was signed, and the build-up to the game was Elneny's going to be this athletic midfielder. And I said to you, Joe, after 2 minutes, he was overlapping the right winger. And I just thought, what chance have you got here if he's doing that?
Yeah.
But this guy stays in the middle, and he gives him such security, to the extent that in the game previously against Bournemouth, he got the ball in midfield. It all opened up in front of him. He broke into the box and looked to have a shot. It was blocked. Bournemouth went the length of the field and scored a goal. Because Xhaka just cannot stop oppositions in their tracks the way that Torreira can.
It's an interesting thing that it would be perceived, I think, as a relatively easy enough position. Sit in the centre circle and try and sniff out the danger, and there aren't huge demands on you generally in that position. And yet it seems very few players can do it as well as, you know, a Torreira or a Kante when he's in that role, as opposed to what he's doing a lot of the time now. So clearly it's far more difficult than it, you know, reads on paper as a position.
But it does, in terms of it, ultimately, a lot of it comes from your instruction from your manager. Because with Arsenal, it's all about his philosophy, Wenger, in terms of, listen, we'll just play the way we play. We won't pay no attention to how the opposition set up. We won't have any countermeasures. We won't adjust at all. And that is in stark contrast now to Emery. He's changing his systems all the time. He plays 3 at the back last week for the first time against Bournemouth because he knows that Arsenal centre-halves wouldn't be able to cope with Callum Wilson's pace, wouldn't be able to cope with the fact that Fraser and Brooks come inside and ask questions of them that way. And then he perseveres with it against Tottenham because their front three, that triumph of Dele Alli, Eriksen, Harry Kane, who haven't played together since September, I think, would have put them to the sword. So he has to play 3 at the back there. And that's what's so refreshing, is that, yes, Arsenal are an iconic club, and you have to have a philosophy to enforce your play on the opposition. But you can't be that blasé that you don't make any countermeasures in terms of how they play. And he's brilliant now. He's such a strong manager. He's making strong decisions. I know everyone's talking about Ozil being discarded as such, but he's not suffering any falls. Unless you play the way he wants you to play, which will change over the course of the season in terms of who they're up against, you just won't play. It's as simple as that. And I think the Arsenal fans, more than anyone, are really buying into it.
When you talk about his problem solving and his ability to troubleshoot on the hoof, if Premier League matches finished at half time this season,
it's incredible.
Arsenal would be 19th.
Yeah.
19th. I mean, I think that's extraordinary.
Off the top of my head from the commentary yesterday, Joe, I think Arsenal scored something like 8 first half goals and maybe, I'm not sure if it's 18 or 28 second half goals. It just shows you. But I know people would counter that and say, well, hold on, why are they not dominating in the first half? But this just sums up what he's doing. He's assessing what's happening. He's making adjustments. And they're so dominant in the second half, Arsenal, to the extent now that they've got a real energy about them. So that suggests that they're training harder than they ever were before. They know exactly what's expected of them. And I sound like a broken record here because of the scenarios that we faced with the Irish team. That they were just thrown out there playing off the cuff. Listen, you can have the best players in the world and play off the cuff and you'll be put to the sword. I got relegated with a West Ham team just full of international players because we were just not organised. Players did exactly what they want, and we paid for it.
Yeah. Aubameyang's now scored 10 goals in 12 games. Looks just incredible. Unbelievable. The way he took that finish, the way his finish for the ball that came across, and he curls it into the right corner. Full of confidence. I mean, he looks like just a fantastic prospect, this guy. He's the real deal.
Yeah, but he always was, Joe, wasn't he? We admired him for Borussia Dortmund and thought, wow, what signing that is for Arsenal. But then more or less pushed out to that left wing to accommodate Lacazette. This is a top-class centre-forward. And the strike for that goal, Lloris can't even get set. It's that early. Aurier, right-back, probably thinks he's not going to shoot. He's going to have a touch. And the finish is just sensational. And the stats are even better than what you've just said there since he's come into the building in January. I think he's got something like 19 goals and 5 assists in 26, 27 Premier League games. I mean, it's incredible.
Will it get to a point where he has to be just given priority and play down the middle and almost build the attack around him?
Well, do you know what's really good about him? And he's quite flamboyant. After the games, you want to see the cars he pulls out. And they're these, like, Batmobile type things, and he's got that bit about him. We've seen that. But what he does have, which is so endearing for me, is that he's got a humility about him in terms of the fact that he goes, yeah, I'll play on the left. If you want me to play on the left, I'll do it for the sake of the team. Mm. He's got a great relationship with Lacazette, who looks a far superior player now that he's got someone in and around him. Mm. And he just looks like a really good signing. And I know essentially £60 million seems an awful lot of money. Of course it is. But I'll tell you what, if he was to go or be sold tomorrow, he'd be in excess of double that, I'd say.
Yeah, it's looking like a sound investment. I was listening to Gary Neville afterwards, actually, and he was saying that, he said Mesut Ozil could physically not have played in that game.
Well, no, listen, this is what the reason was given for him not making the starting 11 against Bournemouth the previous week, that I think Emery's words were he couldn't trust him for the physicality, the intensity with which Bournemouth play it.
Yeah.
To which I immediately said, well, if you can't do that against Bournemouth, you're not going to be able to cope in the cauldron of a North London derby.
And as you said yesterday, we're not talking about put your foot in the great old Greg, you know, the great British tradition. We're talking about running, hard running.
Yeah, and listen, we both have noticed a marked improvement in that under Emery as such.
Yeah.
The only reason he can possibly have been on the bench, not on the bench yesterday, as we said, is because he's had a sulk about it.
But you know, and actually, he had a back spasm, actually, yesterday.
Now, listen,
he had a back spasm, but that may be
excuse. That is the one injury that you always throw out. If you're not happy with the manager, my back's hurting me, because you can't prove whether or not it is.
Okay.
So as soon as I heard it was a back spasm, I was like, listen, they've had an argument.
Okay.
Listen, let's have a back spasm because you can't prove it.
Okay, interesting. Right. Okay, so he didn't like being dropped against Bournemouth and the back went.
Well, no, I can understand that. He's a top-class player. And not for one moment do I think that Arsenal should discard him, because he's a brilliant player and you find a way of him playing within that system. Mm. But the way they set up, and now Tottenham, and I you know how much I admire Pochettino. Mm. It's so difficult to stop Tottenham playing out from the back. They've got a goalkeeper who can hit long diagonals. The two fullbacks going in advanced areas. The centre-half split into the fullback areas and the midfielders rotate. You can try and engage it, but you can't stop it. Arsenal stopped it about five or six times in that first half yesterday. It set the tone. They panicked a little bit, Tottenham, and I was surprised at that, bearing in mind how much time they've had under Pochettino, how successful they've been at it. But they couldn't cope with the intensity that Arsenal brought, and Torreira was bossing it from behind. They were all doing it. Aubameyang at times was even dropping back into midfield to pick the ball up and then break again. It really was. Mm. I mean, the highlights, I hope, done it justice. I hope that Stephen and I had done it justice in the commentary, but it was a sensational performance.
No, that's, I mean, it's the reason, but it's the first game we're talking about, and we got you on to talk about it because it felt like a big moment. And it is extraordinary that if Spurs had won yesterday, it would have been their best ever Premier League start, and yet somehow now Arsenal are ahead of them in the table. Arsenal are in fourth position, which is testament to how well Emery has done. And then they go to Old Trafford on Wednesday, where things could not be more polar opposite. Mourinho reportedly has, in the dressing room after the fairly insipid performance against Southampton, turned around and called Paul Pogba a virus in front of the entire team. They're missing eight defenders at the moment, and they had obviously McTominay and Matic playing in defence at the weekend. I mean, the energy that Arsenal brought over the weekend, the enthusiasm, the sense of team spirit. Mourinho, by contrast, is talking about having a lack of mad dogs to go and press and get in the faces of opposition. I'd say you're looking forward to this in a big way. This is going to be fascinating to see if Arsenal really take the game to Manchester United on Wednesday.
Yeah, listen, it will be. You'd hope that they continue that momentum, but I'd be under no illusions that Arsenal at the back are so woeful at times. Mustafi and Mourinho must plan for that.
Right.
I know they've got their issues at the back, and you talk about the injuries, but even when everyone's fit, he doesn't believe he's got a centre-half he can trust as such. But even those comments, to say to a player, allegedly, that you consider him a virus, I genuinely don't think there's a worse thing you could say to a player in terms of his character than that. Now, how he reacts to that, Pogba, even if he had the mindset of, I want to prove you wrong, I just don't see that. I think that relationship's gone beyond repair now, and I just don't know what is happening at Manchester United. They're just unrecognisable from what you normally associate with them in their Premier League heydays.
Yeah, I would. People had started saying a few months ago, Mourinho just wants out, and I would never have really believed that. You know, this was the club he dreamt about managing for such a long time. It's now becoming the only rational explanation for so much of his behaviour, that he just wants out.
Yeah, I mean, he's had the similar scenario with the Chelsea players, didn't he, when he took them on, and that was after winning the league the season before. So those players down tools on him. I don't for one moment think that United are the same type. I don't think they have those similar type of players who would do that. But I never bought into the fact, as much as Mourinho said that this was his dream job, I never saw it as a natural fit. I just genuinely didn't. I think Mourinho is a brilliant manager. People may well say he isn't, he's a past or has been. That's nonsense. He's a top manager. Mm. They've just recruited poorly in terms of getting a player in his ilk, how he wants his teams to play. And I think the likes of the investment you've had in Pogba, Sanchez, and he just doesn't rate them. They don't rate him. It's just an absolute mess. And I think it's going to take a long time for them to recover, United.
Yeah. Quick fire points before we let you go then. The Ballon d'Or has been named as we speak. They're listing out the players as we go. So the most recent name was N'Golo Kante, who's finished 11th. Interestingly, Pogba 15th on the list. We have Neymar 12th, Suarez 13th.
Where's Varane?
Who?
Varane, the Real Madrid centre-half. Is he not on it?
Unless he's in the top 10. Let me flick down. We've gone the top 29. Lloris, Isco, Oblak, Mandzukic, Becker, Marcelo, Ramos.
The usual, isn't it? It's never Bale, defenders. He's a Aguero. World Cup winner. He's a Champions League winner.
Well, hang on, he might be in the top 10.
Well, reveal it then.
I haven't. They haven't revealed it themselves. We're counting down. Nkante's the most recent.
Sorry, I thought you had the list in front of you and you couldn't see it.
Well, I do, but we're down to N'Golo Kante, who's number 11. So we'll have a look out for your guy in the top 10. Basically, it seems like Modric is tipped for the first time in a decade to break the Messi-Ronaldo hold on it. Would you give it to Modric after the year he's had, the World Cup he's had?
I think he's been fantastic. Of course he has, in terms of getting there, driving Croatia to the final. Listen, I don't for 1 second think he's a one-man team, but he's certainly the star man there and the captain. But I'd counter that with Varane at Real Madrid. He's actually won the World Cup, won the Champions League. So, I don't know, it's a difficult one. It really is. I think it literally goes down to personal preference, what you enjoy watching, as opposed to what someone's actually achieved.
Yeah. Well, Cannavaro would be the last defender, would he?
Yeah, he probably is, actually. When he won the World Cup with Italy, yeah.
Yeah. Poor defenders. They don't get a look in.
Yeah, listen, you can't win titles without defenders. Strikers win games. Defenders win titles.
I feel like this is not the first time you've said this in your life. Before we let you go, Ireland, the group, we spoke yesterday and you were pretty positive about things and Switzerland and Denmark and Georgia and Gibraltar, and certainly not being in with Germany and the Netherlands feels like a big result given those long 20 seconds when we were. When we spoke yesterday, we were wondering about the complexion of the game. So And we were talking about like the bargaining and the trading that would go on. It seems a computer largely dictates it now. So the days of going into a room and negotiating seem to be behind us, as far as I understand. But so we've got Gibraltar on March 23rd, followed by Georgia on March 26th. And then in June, it'll be Denmark away and Gibraltar at home. So we were wondering, you know, what Mick might want. He's got the easy side of things first up in that double header in March. I know you were harking back to 01 and going to Amsterdam early doors. Different set of circumstances, a new manager. Will he be happy with that, do you suspect?
Yeah, I think he'd be delighted. I think there's an opportunity to have a good start, a positive start. I think even the very fact that he's saying he's potentially got a meeting with Declan Rice is another feather in Mick's cap as such. And we're hearing Declan Rice talking about it again. And I'm looking at that. I know exactly what's going to happen. There's going to be real good team spirit. He's going to tell them exactly what's thought of them in terms of what is expected of this team. They'll be drilled. There's a lot of time now until they meet up. I think the coaching and the training sessions will be really, really nailed on in terms of the message they want to get across. In terms of timing, the only thing, when I looked at that schedule, Denmark in June, I never like to see us playing when our league seasons are finished. Now, the Premier League will finish around about May the 12th. The Championship, where the majority of our players will be May the 5th. So you're effectively talking about 3 or 4 weeks then until that big game. Mm. I probably would have liked it the other way around, that they had Gibraltar first, then Denmark. But listen, I know players look after themselves far better than and the sports scientist than ever was in our day as such. But I've never liked that low after the season. The kind of intensity of playing suddenly drops down. It's very difficult to restart it again straight away in a game which will ultimately have a big say in what our outcome will be.
And do you think it affects a lesser technical side, excuse the phrase, but do you think it does affect a lesser technical side more so than a Denmark or a team who'd be the perceived favourites?
What, in terms of but their season?
Just that
probably,
it might. Well, no, almost the lack of intensity is more important if you're trying to harass and harry a team, as opposed to, better team can pass the ball around and play their way into a game.
Yeah, but listen, I expect this Ireland team overnight to evolve. I don't expect us to be sitting back and just be about never say die attitude. Mick McCarthy's teams will play on the front foot. There's no doubt about that in my mind. I expect us to put them on the back foot, and home or away, I know there'll be slight variations as such. We'll have the crowd driving us on in Dublin, and the fear factor more than anything will be back for the opposition, because I think over the last year, maybe 18 months, teams are coming to Dublin and they're thinking, well, I quite like this.
Yeah.
It never used to be like that. Yeah. We'd be in the tunnel and you could see them walking out of the old Lansdowne thinking, what are we in for here? The crowd would be up. They'd be looking at us, lads. We'd be seething, spitting at them and literally just ready to go. And I don't think we've seen any of that. And I expect that to come back quickly, especially with the connection now that we'll have with the supporters. We'll be back on side.
Okay. Well, March 23rd, Gibraltar, and then Georgia on March 26th. We'll talk plenty in the meantime, I'm sure. Gary, thanks a million. Much appreciated.
Cheers, Joe. Good luck, mate.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Gary Breen won't be happy. His boy Raphael Varane in at number 7 in the Ballon d'Or list, which continues to unfold before our eyes. The tension is unbearable. So latest we have is Harry Kane at 10, De Bruyne at 9, Eden Hazard 8, Raphael Varane at 7, Mo Salah. We're feeling Mo Salah's a bit hard done by at 6. And then Lionel Messi, number 5. When was the last time Lionel Messi was number 5? So at this point, we're feeling some combination of Modric, Mbappe, Ronaldo and Griezmann might make up the other 4 as things stand. So we'll keep an eye on things. Pat and Evan will join us later on to talk about Derby Day, to talk about Manchester United. And also over the weekend, Mick McCarthy was in town, the great and the good, gathered at Dublin's Convention Centre for the Euro 2020 draw yesterday. For about 10 to 12 horrible seconds, it looked like Ireland were in Group C, which would have meant Germany and the Netherlands. Thankfully, though, a limit of 2 host cities to a group bumped us in with Switzerland, as you know by now, Switzerland, Denmark, Georgia and Gibraltar. So no guarantees, obviously, but still maybe less daunting. And then Michael O'Neill looked horrified as Northern Ireland were picked out by Ronnie Whelan in Group C, to much laughter in the room. Mick McCarthy was all smiles throughout, and afterwards he spoke to our own John Duggan. So here's Mick at the convention.
So Mick McCarthy, with all these draws, you're never going to get what you hope for, but it could have been a lot worse, I'd say.
Well, I don't know if you were in there or you saw it when, you know, they're all going on from the pot that we're in, pot C. I think all of us who hadn't been drawn thought we were going to get with Holland and Germany, and there was a sigh of relief. Not from me, I laughed. I just thought it was going to be, I thought it was a certain. I'm thinking, when back when we qualified for the World Cup, we had Portugal and Holland. Everybody wrote us off for that, and we didn't lose against any of them, and we ended up qualifying. So, you know, whichever group we were in, we're going to have to take it. But I think everybody's slightly relieved. I think that's a bit premature, and I think when you've got Switzerland in the group, who are, I think, one of the best teams in Europe at the minute, and Denmark, who've been our nemesis, knocked us out of the Euros and then beat us in the Nations League, it's not going to be easy.
And Switzerland, the team you last faced, Mick, and it's kind of ironic that you're going to see them again.
It is. I didn't lose too many competitive games at home in, at Lansdowne Road, and that was the last one. So that was a disappointing way to leave, but it gives me a chance of revenge, doesn't it?
Denmark, of course, familiarity sometimes breeds contempt, but with Denmark, a lot of respect.
Well, I guess it'd have to be for them to have contempt for us, wouldn't it? And if they have, then that'd be a mistake by them. But I doubt very much that'll be the case.
Georgia, always one of these teams, I think, going away from home, they're a tricky proposition.
Well, I know we've played them in recently. And I was chatting to Kev Kilbane with him, and he said what a good side they were. And, you know, I think that was probably one of the toughest ones out of pot 4. But then we missed Azerbaijan, which, you know, we end up with Gibraltar. Look, it's the group we've got. I could talk about them. It's no point. We've got to play them all, and I'm looking forward to it.
Been a whirlwind week or two, Mick. When you're seeing the names coming out of the draw, do you really feel excited about it, that you're going to spend the next few months preparing for this?
Yeah, I do. It feels like I'm doing the job now, because we've got something tangible, not just, oh, you're doing the job, but there's nothing going. At least I know what teams are. I can watch the players. I can watch their past games. And just get down to planning, yeah.
And Mick, can I just ask, we've got George again for the 3rd year in a row, and you've got an immediate task ahead of you. How difficult, or is style of play a consideration for the first few fixtures, or is that I mean, it's a priority.
Well, that's an interesting question, isn't it? When I'll get them together on the play on the Saturday, we'll get them together on the Sunday, and we play when Thursday, I'm hardly going to have a revolution of style of play, and so, you know, let's have a season to turn it around. That's not going to be the case. It's going to have to be, you know, well drilled in 4 or 5 days, organised, make sure that we're ready to go, we know what we're doing, and be competitive. But 5 days preparation isn't going to change the world, believe me. Might change the results.
Do you know the players well, or do you have a lot of research to do in terms of the players available to you?
I know most of the players. I can't say I know them all, personally. I've been away a long time. They're all at different clubs, but all the ones who've been playing, I know, yes.
You obviously didn't see a game yesterday, but have you done kind of... have you had an opportunity to do much scouting since you kind of... I suppose you got the word that there was interest in you getting the job?
I went to watch Brentford, Sheffield United on the Tuesday, having got back Monday. I went to Millwall on Wednesday. TC went to watch Villa. He went to watch Birmingham, Preston yesterday. I had somebody at Reading. So, yeah, pretty much, yeah. We've looked at games, of course we have, yeah.
And the championship field of players, I guess, is that kind of where you're sort of looking at for maybe players to break into the squad?
Wherever they are. No, I'd love them all to be playing in the Premier League, because that would mean that they're all better footballers, I guess, and playing it in a better competition. Wherever they are, wherever I think they're good enough, I'll source them from anywhere.
And there's kind of a lot of grumbling about maybe we don't have enough Premier League players, but in terms of the Championship as a...
But what's the point in grumbling about it?
But the step
I can't hold about it, can I? If they're not playing the Premier, what's the point of me grumbling?
But is the step up to international football from the Championship, is it easily manageable?
Well, I tell you about it, when we played in 2002 and the players were playing in the Premier League, but we had lads who were all at the bottom of the Premier League, real scrapping away, Kinson, Matty Holland, and I had Gary Breen, who hadn't even got a club. So I don't subscribe to that. You know, you just, whatever it is, whatever I've got, I'll get them together and make the best of them and try and make sure we qualify. Grumbling is not one of the things I do.
So there we are, that was Mick. I think he's made a good start with the media for sure, Mick McCarthy. Been very open and happy to talk and happy to answer questions. And that was him speaking before the computer throughout the fixtures. So as you know, I'm sure at this stage, March 23rd is when it's all going to kick off, away to Gibraltar, 5:30 kickoff, and then Georgia at home 3 days later. And then in June, it'll be Denmark away and Gibraltar a few days after that. And then just one game in September, that'll be at home to the Swiss. So that'll be a huge game, obviously. And then October, Georgia away, which will be tricky. And 3 days after that, Switzerland away. That's a tricky doubleheader. Georgia away and Switzerland away in October. And then to be followed in November by Denmark. And let's hope that's not a finale to things the way it was for Martin O'Neill in the World Cup qualifications. So Denmark at home, November 18th, will be the final lot of games. So that's it. It'll be played over a space of a few months, nice and quick. And they were Mick McCarthy's initial thoughts. We'll bring you Seamus Coleman now. Coleman was obviously playing for Everton yesterday. We had that game live and off the ball. Nathan and Kev Kilbane were there. We talked to Coleman about the game, obviously, but also Nathan wanted to get his thoughts on Martin O'Neill's departure and the appointment of Mick McCarthy. Have a listen.
A lot's gone on since we last spoke, less than 2 weeks ago, up in our house with the national team. Change of management over the last 2 weeks. Were you surprised with how quickly it all happened in the end with Martin O'Neill leaving?
Yeah, you know, we played the game and then, I think, you know, it was a couple of days later it broke. And, you know, I've said it from day one, any time a manager has left, it's never a nice feeling. I always feel like it's part responsibility of myself and other players, and any manager that comes into club level or international level, they're always wanting to do the right thing. They're always wanting to win matches. And, you know, the boss personally was great with me and gave the nation some unbelievable nights. And, you know, it was a tough year and, you know, the FAI made a decision, but I only have great things to say about Martin O'Neill.
What do you make of the new setup? It's rather unusual where we know that Mick McCarthy's there till August 2020 and Stephen Kenny's coming in. What have you made of it all?
Yeah, look, it's first and foremost, I think it's great for Stephen. I think he's worked extremely hard in the League of Ireland, and I'm sure a lot of people have noticed that. Well, they have if he's got the appointment of the 21 manager and the future international manager. But I like to see people who work hard and get what they deserve in the long run. And, you know, he had some great nights in Europe, got them to the Europa League group stages and held their own, you know, got a bit unlucky at times and won, I think it's three titles out of the last four. Maybe Cork won one. So, not great, great man, and let's see how he does with the 21s. Hope he can do well. And then obviously Mick, I've no dealings with Mick. I've not come across him before, but anyone who has say he's a gentleman, and you know he gets that respect quite quickly, and he's a good football man. So we look forward.
Have you spoken to him yet?
No, I've not spoken to him yet. You know, I'm sure he's quite busy at the minute with the draw and all the rest, and that was on today, and I see we got Denmark again, so we need to put that right. But no, look, we all have to do well at club level now and go back and get ready for March. There's no friendlies, we just need to be ready.
Yeah, because it is Switzerland, Denmark, Georgia, Gibraltar. We'll find out over the next few hours how that runs in terms of the fixtures. But as you say, March, he's probably going to have, what, 4 days before the first game? It could be Denmark away, it could be Gibraltar at home. You just don't know. Is there much he can do as a group over the next 4 months before March to try and make sure the confidence levels, that everybody's on the same wavelength when you get back in?
Yeah, it's difficult. I suppose that depends on which way the manager's going to approach on what he does, whether he goes to watch players or goes to see training sessions. I don't know, that'll be up to himself. But now we just all have to do our job at club level, play well at club level, and make sure that we're in the team at club level. I think that's important. We need lads playing and come back, and you know, it's a fresh start for everyone.
Yes, one thing that's been mentioned quite a bit over the last week was maybe that a disconnected form between the national team and the supporters over the last year, largely because of results, of course. Have you felt that? Have you felt that the backing maybe hasn't been what it once was?
Well, I would find it very hard to say that, because you know, we went to Denmark and we got the 0-0 and went over to clap our fans at the end, and they supported us so well that night, and they were clapping us off the pitch. I think Irish fans, you know, results haven't been great, but when you're there and they're supporting you, and that's what I love about our support. And look, they'll all be looking forward to March, and you know, the main thing now is to qualify for the tournament, because having some part of it in Ireland is amazing.
Best of luck over the next few weeks.
Thanks very much.
There we are, Seamus Coleman speaking to Nathan. He was in the tunnel at Anfield, that was yesterday, and obviously disappointed after conceding a 96th minute winner at Anfield. Origi with the winner. Bizarre circumstances. We'll talk to Pat and Evan in a few moments' time about the game and the weekend generally. Here was Coleman, though, talking about that late winner for Liverpool.
Well, Seamus, 95th minute of a Merseyside derby. Must be absolutely sickening.
It's hard to take. You know, we came here to play our game, and that's what the manager said all week: play your game, we don't change for nobody. And I thought we did that. I thought we created a lot of chances, and they created chances because they're a top team. And yeah, it's just hard. It's hard to take the way we conceded. You know, it's always going to be a tough one to take, and you know, we'll have to dust ourselves down. But you know, I felt really sorry for the fans today as well.
Is there anything you can say to Jordan Pickford after a moment like that?
That he's won us more points than he's lost us. These things happen. You know, I played against Man United a few weeks ago. They beat us 2-1. I didn't play well. Martial gave me a tough time. People, it's be someone else the next time we lose. These things happen. Jordan has been immense. He's been, you know, one of our best players since he signed. So unfortunately, these things happen, and it's always tougher when you're a goalkeeper. One mistake and it's a goal.
It has been an incredibly tough run of away games, and the performances feel as though they've been getting better with every one, from the scoreless draw at Stamford Bridge to going so close to even winning this game with the chances that you created today. Does it still feel as though this team needs that almost landmark victory against one of the top five, top six, to give yourselves the belief that you're on taking it to another level?
Yeah, look, we need to do better away from home against the top teams, the top six teams, and something the manager has highlighted. And I suppose the only positive is we have went to these places and we've played our game. We've tried to open teams up, we've tried to create chances, and we have done that. And you know, we just don't know, is it the mentality side of it needs to change, or maybe just that little bit of luck that we didn't get at times today. We had some clear-cut chances, and I don't know what it is, but yeah, to be a top team, you need to go to top teams and get results.
Is it possible to describe what the dressing room is like when you lose a 95th minute goal in the derby?
Oh, it's you know, it's hard to take. I think it's more kind of disbelief than anything else, the way it was today. And look, we're disappointed for the fans, and you know, they all have to go to work tomorrow and get a bit of stick, so we always think of them, and disappointed for ourselves, but look, that's football.
Seamus Coleman there, speaking to Nathan at full time at Anfield. We're going to talk to Pat and Evan next.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome back. That music, of course, means Pat and Evan. Hello, Pat.
How are you doing? You all right, Joe?
Yeah, very well. So we were just keeping an eye on the Ballon d'Or all evening. Number 10, Harry Kane. Number 9, Kevin De Bruyne. Number 8, Eden Hazard. Gary Breen's man, Raphael Varane, number 7. We had Mo Salah in number 6. Maybe slightly hard done by, I don't know. We had Lionel Messi, number 5. And now we have Mbappe, number 4. Griezmann, number 3. And the winner is Luka Modric, with Ronaldo in second place. Luka Modric is your Ballon d'Or winner 2018. Pat Nevin, are you okay with that?
Yeah. I think he had a really great season. To be honest, is he the best at the moment? No, he isn't the best at the moment. But over the whole season, he had a brilliant season last season. And a very, very good World Cup as well. So it's kind of hard to argue. It's amazing that you don't actually get Messi or Ronaldo for once not getting it. It's kind of stunning.
Mm.
But having said, Messi's had a really good season as well. And maybe in any normal year, you know, you think, well, he might be the best player in the world. But, you know, just the stakes are so high with him. He has to score about 40 or 50 a season before he's even considered.
True.
So, nah, it's good for him. I mean, Ronaldo and Messi have had plenty. Don't worry about them.
It's true. It's a bit too much stock placed in the World Cup, I would think, generally.
Yes, I generally think so. I mean, a World Cup's odd because you go to a World Cup and you think, wow, you need to be unbelievable to, you know, get to the final. Yeah, well, you need to be pretty damn good. Yes, you need to be one of the best in the world. But you can get through a lot of rounds playing a lot of average teams.
Mm.
You can get a good draw, you know, before getting there. And if you've, because of course the best teams are seeded anyway. And then you get seeded in the group. So really it only starts, you know, once you get out of the groups. And even then it can be, you know, not a bad run to get all the way to the final. So as England got all the way to the semis, you know, well done them. But it was about the easiest run you could imagine. So, yeah, but take nothing away from them. They've done well. And remember, they're a very small country. So they've done well for a very small country.
No, it's true. I don't want to take anything away from Luka Modric. He's amazing. I just part of me is thinking of Mo Salah, who's sitting at home with his number 6 this evening and thinking to himself, well, that's me done. That's as good as I can do. And it's still only number 6.
Yeah. To be honest, 6, damn hard. That's harsh. That's really stunning.
I think so.
Remind me of the ones above him. De Bruyne was above him, wasn't he?
Yeah, we have Messi ahead of him. So Messi's at 5. The first time in a long time Messi in his life has been 5th at football. Mbappe 4, Griezmann 3, Ronaldo 2, Modric 1.
Kind of hard though, Salah, isn't it? You know, you could maybe scrape him into the top 5 there.
I would have thought so.
But after that, it's a tough year because you're always going to get Ronaldo and Messi up there.
Mm.
You're always, you know, De Bruyne was stunning. I mean, I would agree with that. I would place De Bruyne above Salah for this season, for last season. I really would. He was that brilliant.
Well, he's 9th. He's behind Eden Hazard.
Yeah, and I mean, where does Silva come in? You know, David Silva.
Well, let me check Silva because you're dead right. Silva is not even in the top 30 that I have in my sheet here.
It's extraordinary, considering, you know. So, I mean, it's you know, the votes are taken on board. And in the end, you know, there's a lot of players there that you have to be in the right team in the right place. That's another big thing. You know, Modric has been brilliant and, you know, controlled games. But he's playing for a pretty good national side and he's playing for a phenomenal club side.
Yeah.
And if you put one or two other players in that position, you know, I would almost argue you could stick someone like Eriksen in his position in a better team, and he might actually do just as well.
Yeah,
it's one of those things, you need the right team as well.
He's not in the top 30. We have Kante at 11, Pogba's 15. I suppose he was good in the World Cup, in fairness. Jose Mourinho's called him a virus, apparently, in front of the team this weekend, which we'll come to in a second. A virus, for the love of God. Firmino's 19th, Rakitic is there, Ramos is there at 19. Cavani is 22nd, Mane is 22nd, joint 22nd, Marcelo, Alisson, the Liverpool goalkeeper now, is 25th, Mandzukic is there as well, Isco is there.
Do not give a stuff, they do not care.
Yeah, sorry, I'm spending more time in this than they are, they don't even care about this really. So.
Because if they're not in the top 10, I mean, even the top 10, some of them will be absolutely offended by, but the players of that calibre, you know, there's first and there's worst as far as they're concerned with a lot of them. So outside the top 10, and they'll feel mildly abused by it. You know, it's an interesting one, and they've got roughly the right people there, in the right places. So, you know, fair enough. Well done, Luca. And he seems a nice enough bloke most of the time.
He does. He's thanked his family, and everybody's very happy for him. So we'll move on. We'll get on to Arsenal in a second. We've already touched on that with Gary Breen on the show. He's a big Arsenal fan, and he was doing the game for us yesterday at the Emirates. So Merseyside, Liverpool 1, Everton 0. cruel in the end. Jordan Pickford went with his two hands, which was the striking thing. He was desperate to catch that ball. Alan Shearer and Ian Wright were very harsh on him on Match of the Day. I thought Mark Chapman, in a way, was just trying to at least put forward the thought that it was a tricky one. I mean, it was a tricky one. It really came right down on that crossbar.
It's amazing. The vast majority of goalkeepers that are probably 3 or 4 inches taller than him just go up and flick it over the top. That's just what they do. You know, they don't muck about. They don't do anything clever. They just flick it over the top. In fact, there's a bit of me that when I watch goalkeepers doing that, I get a bit miffed because I think, yeah, that's too easy, flick it over the top. You should actually go and catch that, yeah. You know, especially the very tall ones, you know, the likes of Cech and Courtois and all those guys. But he's not one of them, and it was right in between that area where they should try and catch it or flick it over the top. It's an awful mistake to make at that moment, but you can imagine his mind. You know, I often say you don't watch things in slow motion because they didn't happen in slow motion. But I guess it did happen in slow motion in his mind there. He saw it all coming and thought, if I flick that over, that's a corner against us. That's another opportunity. So that's why he's tried to do that. And he's just got completely muddled with it. And, you know, goalkeepers make mistakes now and again. And, you know, if that happens in the first minute and your team come back, then it's okay. It's just a horrendous time to do it. Yeah. Especially, you know, Everton had actually played really well for large sections of that game. And I wasn't surprised, it has to be said, you know, beforehand, you know, this is... You know, Jurgen Klopp said it as well, but it's quite obvious now. This is the best-looking Everton team there's been for a couple of decades, and nobody's going to take them lightly at the moment. But they had to win that one if they were really going to push to get in with any consideration of getting in the top five or six.
I must admit that their rapid improvement had passed me by ever so slightly. I hadn't really watched them play live in a couple of weeks now, or even really realistically in maybe more than that, unfortunately, the way things went. And Klopp, I thought, was genuinely effusive in his praise of what Silva has done. So maybe elaborating that for us. The best Everton side in decades is big praise. Talk to us about what they're doing so well.
Not really that big praise to be.
Big-ish.
I mean, they've had tough times for quite a long time. They've fought and they've battled and they've kind of... There's parts of the team that have been good, and we know that the wide areas have been good for a while. Then it was a paid, they were not bad at centre-back, etc. But a team that looks balanced all over, no, that's not been the case for a long, long time. But it is the case now. You know, both full-back looks, Seamus, you know about, Dina looks class in that left-back area now. They've mucked about with the centre-halves a little bit, but Mina's going to be good enough, and he's tall enough as well. Getting to the midfield, Gay does a sensible job, although he nearly made one terrible mistake at the weekend there against Liverpool. But then you start getting into the serious quality when you get in front of that, you know, and really the quality in front of that's been absolutely brilliant. You know, I think of Sigurdsson, Richarlison in front of him, you know, his hold up play's been good, and it may well be that he's not the answer at centre forward, but at the moment he's doing a brilliant job for them. Walcott, again, he's a danger, but, you know, I just get a feeling the explosion forward that I expected from him at Everton hasn't quite happened, but he's still good enough to be a threat because of his pace. And now the other side has been quality as well. So, you know, generally, all the way through that team, I'm looking at it thinking, nah, plenty there, absolutely plenty there. And there's just the fact that you've got, you know, it's balanced. You keep on talking about it. We've said it for years. Like, the teams, it sounds like the easiest thing in the world, talking about balance. But in actual fact, it's amazing how managers don't seem to be able to get it. So, by the way, I'm flicking away at my computer here for a name that I'd forgotten. And of course, it's Andre Gomez. And he's the other one that's come into the midfield there, which he was extraordinary. It was a good argument for him being man of the match in both teams in that game there. So you add that to it and the whole thing looks absolutely superb.
Yeah. So Marco Silva's done a really remarkable job then. How many of those has he brought in over the summer? How many of those, you know, or has he just actually put the pieces of the jigsaw in the right place?
I mean, it's a big one. Bernard's a recent one as well. Obviously, got to, you know, Sigurdsson wasn't his, but I would almost argue it is because he's the one that's put Sigurdsson into the centre midfield area. And of course, Andre Gomez as well has been, you know, a massive change from the start of the season as well. So, I mean, it's not exactly a half a team, but you're getting the best out of the group that's there. And also, you know, bringing out the best of Sigurdsson, getting it in a position. Maybe others wouldn't have considered putting Richarlison as a centre forward. You know, they've got Tosin, they've got Calvert-Lewin, but he doesn't think they're good enough. So he puts Richarlison there, which is the correct answer at the moment. But a lot of people wouldn't have thought of that. Mm. So all those things together, seeing where the, you know, the round pegs were for the round holes, and he's put that together. And it does look, you go and watch them now. And, you know, I was at the game when they played against Chelsea down at Stamford Bridge. And, you know, they were unlucky. It was 0-0. They probably just about deserve, you know, a point out of it. They lack confidence a wee bit near the end of the game. But all the way up to about 60, 65 minutes, they were, you know, hitting blow for blow with Chelsea, who have been pretty good this season. So I don't think there's any fear factor there anymore. They're not a team that's going to sit back.
Mm.
So out with, you know, the top five, as it were. And I hate to say that because it is top five, isn't it?
Mm.
I mean, United have got a big game coming up. Is it
Wednesday?
Is it Arsenal? Yeah, Arsenal. Yeah. So if United don't win that, I mean, really, seriously, can they get back, you know, to really challenge for the top four? I mean, a lot of people, if you look at the odds for most of the betting companies now, nobody's giving them a hope. And they don't get it that wrong that often.
No.
So if they do lose to Arsenal, I think that's them out, which leaves a kind of gap for, you know, Everton to be the next challengers of that top five.
Yeah, it's very impressive on Silva's behalf. A quick point, not to be too provincial for a moment. Will James McCarthy do well to get back in that side long term, medium term?
Well, I think if eventually you kind of need to make changes in the Premier League. I mean, a lot of teams have got 8, 9 and 10 games in December. So you're going to get games. There's going to be injuries. There's going to be players that get suspended. You're going to sort of lack form at periods of time. But whether he walks into that team, it's kind of hard looking at that team where you actually get into it, because you're going to have to take Gay's position, or you're going to have to take Andre Gomez's position.
Coleman Wicklow has texted in about Gay, wondering, what does Pat think of him giving the ball away too readily?
Well, that's what I mentioned it right at the top of the show there, didn't I? He gave it away, and it was awful. It really stuck out. So he's absolutely spot on. And it wasn't even, it was one of those ones where he just got the ball the wrong side of him a couple of times. And it's, you know, like, you don't do that when you're the last man in the midfield. And it was absolutely the worst thing you can do, apart from a bad pass back from that position. Don't get caught there. Always be aware. And he was unaware. Mm. He's not usually like that. I actually think he had a particularly weak game in that game. But I've watched him a lot and he's not like that all the time.
Okay. As for Liverpool, so their approach this season, it's becoming fairly apparent now. They're not pressing with the same manic intensity. And I'm curious, is that self-preservation and very much an edict from the top? So let's try and be at our best at the business end of the season. Or is it some kind of tiredness, maybe best exemplified by Firmino? What's your sense about how Liverpool are going about their business when they don't have the ball?
Well, if he tries that, inverted commas, heavy metal football for 90 minutes for every single game all this season, when half his team were in the World Cup and they tried it all for a large part of last season as well, well, he's going to burn them out.
Okay.
No shadow of a doubt. They will burn out. Firmino, as you're correct, quite rightly say, already looks slightly burnt out. You know, Salah has had a very good start this season, but nowhere near the quality it was, you know, for large periods of last season. And you could always almost say the same for Leroy Sadio Mane as well. So, you know, you've got to give them a little bit of a rest. It was good to get Shaqiri in, so it gives them a little bit of a chance. But playing that high intensity stuff for that amount of time in this season after a World Cup, I think it would be madness. However, learning how to do it at the right times in the game and knowing when the signals are to do that, well, there's nothing wrong with that, because that's not new. Because I played exactly like that when we played, you know, with a different methodology then. It was give it to their centre, let their centre back get it and then rush them. You know, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Usually centre backs were pretty hopeless then, so you get the ball back. You know, well, I say hopeless on the ball, so you get the ball back. So wouldn't do it for 90 minutes because, you know, it'd just wreck you. So, you know, there's a bit of sense about it. I suspect Klopp's seen that. He's not a stupid man. He won't go and run the legs off them. He's got a bigger squad this season, but not big enough to be able to do that. So, no, I think it's deliberate, it's considered. And to be fair, although it has looked less impressive this season, have a look at the league table.
Yeah.
It's not bad, is it?
I know, it's amazing. You look at Klopp's reaction, and of course it is. There's the sheer uncontaminated joy of a last-minute winner in the derby, and off he goes. But there is also, you suspect, a weight on them, on all of them, the Manchester City effect, which is, frankly, if you do, you know, drop another 2 points, that's you 4 points off the pace. I mean, that's close to feeling insurmountable. That's the pressure that's kind of the unspoken pressure that's on all of them, even on, at this stage of the season?
Well, there's a secondary unspoken pressure is if you let Manchester City go and you get dropped into the ones that are chasing below, then you've got a problem.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a major problem because, you know, Chelsea are there in third. I'm still not convinced that they're going to be top four, but, you know, they've got a chance. Spurs almost certainly will go on a decent run again. They've had one defeat there, but, you know, what a good week for them beating Chelsea, then beating Inter, then, you know, had a terrible period of time against the Arsenal. But apart from that, they're up there and fighting. And Arsenal suddenly, much to my surprise, I will say, they're up there fighting and battling. Yes, Arsenal fighting, battling in the same sentence. And it was amazing to see. Can they do it all the time? A few weeks ago, I was down watching them at Crystal Palace, and they were out-muscled, out-battled in that game. Palace were the better team by a mile in that game. So it's whether, you know, the new management can actually bring that sort of stuff that they showed against Spurs every single week.
Yeah.
Not sure yet, but that was pretty damn good against Spurs for most of that game, I thought. So, you know, it's all very well saying, you know, Klopp's under a bit of pressure because he's looking up. Realistically, you're probably looking behind you as much as you're looking up, because you're not going to catch that.
It is extraordinary. I will ask you about Arsenal now in just one second. Just one last point on Liverpool, who were so settled last year with their 4-3-3, and we see when they do work Shaqiri into the side, they do go for this more 4-2-3-1 and Salah up top, and people are saying, well, maybe does it suit Firmino to be in behind? And Jamie Carragher was saying, well, look, it's to get Shaqiri into the side. It's also, he felt maybe Fabinho prefers being in a sitting two. And so suddenly you have all these, you know, the opposite to Marco Silva, where there's balance and it all sort of fits together. You feel like Klopp's juggling a few different things now. And is it also, are teams changing now? They're playing against them. Why the 4-2-3-1? Why is Klopp doing this when it worked so well for so long last season?
Well, we had the same conversation with me last week about Chelsea, you know, about Kante.
Yeah.
Why 4-3-3 when it should be 4-2-3-1? Do you adapt a team to suit one or two individuals, or do you stay focused on what is your ethos? And it's a tricky one, that, because it's not a simple thing. You do what is right for the situation. I suspect with Klopp, he's looked at it and thought, right, okay, we're not quite, you know, as potent as we were last season for a variety of reasons, the tiredness we've mentioned, but also teams learn. You remember, you know, Chelsea went and won the league there with a 3-4-3, and everybody was completely stumped for a whole season.
Yeah.
Then the next season, sorted. Knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
Got behind it, figured out where they had plenty of time over the summer to go and look at all the stats, where they wanted to play, where they could be stopped, etc. And they were stopped. And eventually, like, they had to change it. They changed it to, you know, more of a 3-5-2 after that. So you have to change. You have to adapt. It's best to adapt when you're in a strong position, because if you adapt on the way down, it looks defensive. But having said that, if they've adapted into this different position, this different system, and it's something that they can use, but they can always go back to that 4-3, that 3-3, and that's something special. But you have to be absolutely honest about it, and it's not an Evertonian here or an ex-Chelsea player saying it. They're not the strength they were last season. They're not the power and the pace they were last season. I've watched them away from home in Europe. I was over in Belgrade watching them, and they didn't look anything like the Liverpool I'd watched last season. So, you know, you never know. It might come back, you know, after January. I suspect they probably need another player or two in that midfield, you know, to help them a little bit in that period.
Okay, interesting stuff. So you mentioned Old Trafford Wednesday. Arsenal go there, and I think what Emery seems to be doing is really amazing. Even within games, we were saying to Gary Breen earlier on, if games finished at halftime in the Premier League, Arsenal would be in 19th. Is the start of the weekend I'm throwing at you. And then, as I mentioned, it seems Mourinho called Pogba a virus after the game in Southampton. I'm starting to come around to the opinion that maybe he does want to be fired. It's the only logic I'm seeing through all the madness. So, Old Trafford Wednesday.
Secondary logic would be, I was listening to a guy, an old All Blacks player was talking a couple of weeks ago, and there's a book being written about the kind of team spirit within the All Blacks. I'll change the wording, but you'll know what I mean. See, one of the big things is have no a-holes in your team, right?
Oh, yeah.
And if you know what they mean, you know exactly what you mean. You want team players. You want somebody who's in it for the group. And it doesn't matter how good a player you are, you got to be in it for the group. I think Mourinho's just said, no, you're in it for you, mate. And he's given up. I think he's completely given up.
But sorry to interrupt, now, but was Pogba was in it for the team at the World Cup?
I'm not convinced.
You're not convinced? Okay.
Generally a team player. It just always seems to be about him. And sometimes it works. I mean, hey, it always seemed to be about Ronaldo, you know.
Yeah.
But you better be damn good every week if it's all about you.
Mm.
Every single week, you better be the star. And at this point in time, without, you know, getting behind Mourinho, because he's not doing it the way you should be doing it. He's not getting a group around him. The only way he can do that, if you say that about Pogba and you want him out, you better get him out pretty quickly, get the money and be able to re-spend it. And also, you better have a team behind you and make sure the team aren't behind him. So I agree with your viewpoint on it. If he's doing this now and it's a high-stakes game of poker and almost saying to his teammates and the club, right, it's him or me, make a decision, then, you know, maybe he's bringing control back in himself there. Because if they say, okay, then it's a player, then he shrugs his shoulders and goes off and manages Real Madrid. Yeah, fine, good, yeah. Let's move on.
Yeah.
But if they back him and get rid of Pogba to probably Real Madrid or somebody like that, then he then has shown his power and his strength in the group again. But he's got to start getting everybody working together as a unit, because it still doesn't look like it yet. It's kind of ugly. And going 2-0 down against Southampton was just absolutely extraordinary. And I won't write it off yet, but I'm pretty close to writing off. They're 8 points off of that second place where Arsenal are just now. If Arsenal beat them in this one, you know, they'll be 11 points off Arsenal. It's a long way back against a bunch of teams who aren't losing many games.
Yeah. Wednesday's going to be fascinating, especially if they lose, to see what reception it gets in Old Trafford. Pat, beautifully done. We'll talk next week.
Well, I'll try. Can I just finish in one last line?
Always,
I've got quite a busy week next week.
Okay.
So wait for this. So on Sunday, I'm at Chelsea and Man City. Monday, nice. Newcastle, Watford, is it? For News Talk.
For News Talk?
Yeah.
You're not there for News Talk.
I think it might be.
You're not. There's no chance we're doing Newcastle Watford next Monday. We'll talk off air. Right, continue.
Okay. On Monday, I'm at the Everton game.
Oh, sorry, you're at Chelsea City for News Talk on Sunday.
No, Chelsea City's Chelsea TV.
Ah, is that Saturday?
I've got all this right.
So, okay, you're at Newcastle Watford on the Sunday, maybe.
Sunday, yes.
Yes, you said Monday. You said Monday. I was freaking out there. Okay, right. Sunday. Right, good. I'm back on board.
So Saturday, Chelsea.
Yeah.
Sunday, Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
Monday night, Everton.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday, Liverpool-Napoli.
Oof.
Wednesday, Manchester City-Hoffenheim.
Oof.
Thursday, back to London for Chelsea again.
Okay.
So, 6 games in 6 days.
Nice.
Zooming all over the UK. So, if I can fit in having a quick chat to you.
No, there's no pressure. You can have the week off. Nice. I'll be sitting here Sunday. I'll be sitting here Monday. I'll also be here Tuesday. I'll be here if you want me Wednesday, and we'll be in the office Thursday, just in case you're looking for me.
I will definitely talk to you on Sunday.
All right. Okay. Right. We'll talk next on Sunday. Perfect. Listen, thanks a million. Enjoy your week then.
I will do. See you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Football on Off the Ball. Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.